Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rima Rosen. I'm the Associate Vice Principal for Research and International Relations at McGill, and I'm also a professor in human genetics and pediatrics and continue to conduct my research program in those areas. It's a pleasure for me to welcome you to this afternoon session, to the Women in Science, Engineering, and Medicine Symposium. And I would first like to acknowledge some of the groups that made this event possible through their funding and support: the Beattie Memorial Lectures Committee, Situating Science, Science Outreach, especially Ingrid Berker, the McGill Institute for the Study of Canada, the Department of History and Classical Studies, and the Faculty of Medicine, especially Dr. Mariana Newkirk. I'd like to thank the speakers and the panelists and, of course, the audience for coming to participate in this symposium. I myself am a biomedical scientist. I know very little or knew very little about history of women and the gender issues in academia until a couple of years ago when I was asked to serve on a national expert panel, and I accepted because it was a privilege and a real learning experience. This was a national panel commissioned by the federal government, specifically the Minister of Industry, to generate a report on women in university research. So this was a mandate given to the Council of Canadian Academies. The report has been written. It is now in editing and translation phases, and it should be out in about a month. Now, we actually talked about the status of women. The Council of Canadian Academies is not allowed to make formal recommendations, but we did provide what we called good practices that exist in North America and in Europe, for example. So those are essentially informal recommendations, I think, that might be useful to address some of those issues. Now, some of the issues that we covered included the pay gap, gender bias in hiring, the importance of attracting young women into science early on. We discussed the importance of mentorship, role models, and the work-life balance. And as I said, I've learned a lot from participating in this panel, and I think it might be useful or of interest to many of you to look at this report. Now, there is no one silver bullet that will address all these different issues. We are celebrating Carrie Derrick today, the first full professor in Canada. And although we have made significant progress in the last century, the percentage of female full professors in Canada is still relatively low. There are other issues that will address this bias in academia, and I obviously don't have a lot of time to go into them, but I just want to make the comment that not all disciplines have the same problems. There are high percentages of women enrolled in undergraduate and graduate programs in the biomedical sciences, in the social sciences, but they tend to drop off later on at the postdoctoral level and at the junior assistant professor level and so on. In the engineering and natural sciences, it is a very different problem. I'm sure you're going to hear more this afternoon from the director of NSERT, Suzanne Forche, who's here today. But the problem in the engineering and natural sciences is that we have low percentages of women that enter into the undergraduate and graduate programs. So that particular problem has to be addressed much earlier on in the elementary and in the high school systems if we're going to encourage more women into those areas. So as I said, it's not one solution for all. But I did want to comment on a paper that just came out a couple of months ago in August in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's quite interesting. So this was a study out of Yale, a randomized double-blind study of 127 science faculty from prestigious research-intensive universities. They had 127 science faculty, and they rated applications of a student, randomly assigned a male or a female name. So the CV, the application, was identical, except the name was changed, or the one half received the male name and one half received the female name. And this was for a laboratory manager position. In the end, faculty participants rated the male applicant as more competent, as more hireable. They selected a higher starting salary for this male, and they offered more career mentoring to the male applicant. In addition to those findings, which have been generated from other studies, perhaps not as formally, there was no significant difference within the faculty, no gender difference. In other words, male and female science faculty members had the same issues. There was no significant difference in terms of the way they treated those applications. So We have internal issues as well as gender issues that we need to address. So, as I said, we have quite a ways to go. Let me just make one final personal comment. We do have some young women in the audience, and I have trained and continue to train female graduate students, and one of the major issues that continues to come up is the issue of work-life balance. And many women are concerned about going into academia, into the sciences, medicine, and so on, because they believe that it can be difficult to have successful personal lives as well as professional lives. This is not something that we often deal with in an open forum, so I just want to say that I think I've had a very successful personal life as well. I have two children, I've been married to the same individual for 30 years, and I do have a life. So I think it is possible to conduct and to be successful both professionally and personally, and I would certainly, and I think that role models like yourselves, like some of you, should be out there telling our female younger members of society that it is possible to have a successful career. So thank you for being here. I hope you enjoy this symposium, and I'm now going to invite Professor Elspeth Heeman from the Department of History and Classical Studies to introduce our speakers.
All right, hello. Thank you for coming. Welcome. I just have to announce a quick change, last-minute change to the program. Professor Andre Levesque is ill and could not come speak today. So she was going to introduce the session, talk about Montreal and Carrie Derrick's milieu a bit. I'm going to say a few words about Carrie Derrick herself, and then I'm going to hand over to our speakers. So just to say, talk a little bit about the person who, you know, sort of kicked off this moment. It's quite a photograph, isn't it? She was quite a forthright, intelligent, you know, she's confident, she's intelligent. You can see this in the picture, the graduation picture. When that photo was taken, 1890, she was the top of her class. She had beat every other student in McGill as, you know, as the best student of her year. She won prizes, medals, she had a 94% average. She had previously to coming to McGill, she had been a teacher in girls' school, and that was what she went back to doing in 1890. But The professor of botany wanted her at his side to work with her, and he brought her back. He managed to find the money to bring her in to be a sort of assistant demonstrator in botany. And there was some negotiation because it would have meant a salary drop. There was a benefactor. She was known when she first came out. She said that she was a Donalda. When McGill was first talking about introducing women in the early to mid-1880s, the professoria, the principal said, well, it would be great, but we don't have any money. And so Donald Smith, later Lord Strathcona, said, well, here's a check for $50,000. So, and then a couple of years later, he wrote another check, a larger check. So the early female students that came to McGill were the Donaldas, and she was one of these. And they were a very distinguished, lively, fun-loving group of young women. So she came back to McGill in 1892, and she took on a lot of the work. She worked side by side with Professor Penhallow in the botany department for years. And then in 1909, and she went on to do higher education, get advanced degrees. And in 1909, at which point she had publications to her name, she was teaching and working in genetics. McGill, when she came in, was still very hostile under Dawson, Sir William Dawson, hostile to evolution. And it was sort of quietly smuggled in by various professors here and there, and Carrie Derrick was one of the people who started doing this innovative teaching that, you know, was bringing McGill very much into 20th century research paradigms. 1909, and she had very impressive credentials as a scholar, as a publisher, her articles, her teaching. She was very involved in all sorts of organizations, scientific, feminist, social justice, all sorts of organizations in Montreal as well. And in 1909, when Professor Penhallow fell ill, she took over the teaching and she began to run the department on an interim basis. And then in 1912, they advertised the position. They were going to hire somebody. They were going to hire the best person out there around the world. There was no, you know, she was quite shocked that they advertised. They advertised. They brought, you know, hundreds of letters and applications and books flooding in. And despite substantial local support, Dean of Arts, for example, other people around on campus who were spoke up in favor of her, said she should get the job. She did not get the job. It was awarded to an American botanist, but enough people spoke up on her behalf. There was clearly, and she had already, you know, sort of insisted that her claims not be overlooked, her salary not be always bumped down, but actually bumped up. She should be getting more than a first-year male undergraduate student for doing, you know, basic work around the department. She consistently, you know, insisted that her standing be fully recognized, that she was fully competent, a very prolific, gifted scholar, and she forced the university to recognize this. And in 1912, they created two chairs. A department of botany with two chairs in it, and she was professor of morphological botany. And there was a great deal of, it's still not very clear just how much of a real professorship this was seen to be. In many respects, it was not. And you can read the full story of this. The historian of women at McGill, really, Margaret Gillette, has written a book, We Walked Very Warily, and she's got an article on the chair for Carrie Derrick that she acquired in 1912. So you can read the story of Carrie Derrick and the appointment. But, you know, it just seems that it's not a, you know, the story that Carrie Derrick lived is one that really does need to be retold. We need to remember it because it is, I think, still being lived again and again and again, even in the, you know, the centenary after this happened. Right, so that's Carrie Derrick. Now we're going to look a little more about the history of women in science and medicine and engineering in Canada, and activism, women's activism, the efforts they made to bring their science to a larger public, and to, you know, to get involved in that larger public, and to be prolific scholars. So I'm just going to say, I'm going to introduce my speakers very quickly and then step out of the way. We have three speakers, very pleased to have all of them speaking on the subject. First, we have Peter Campbell, who teaches history at Queen's University, originally trained at Trent, and PhD in labor history. He's the author of two monographs on the left in the early 20th century, one of them Canadian Marxists and the Search for the Third Way, and the other a study of Rose Henderson, who was a Montreal activist and, you know, sort of moved in some of these same circles. And he will be speaking on Carrie Derrick, Eugenics, and the Legacy of First Wave Feminism. Secondly, we have Ariane Morelli, who is based at McGill University and Harvard Medical School. She is a specialist in adult congenital heart problems study. She has a clinic here. She's based at Harvard as well. She has held different positions, different parts. And here she would be presenting, again, a historical piece, on, as well as bringing it up to date a bit, Out of the Blue and Into the Pink, a story of women in 20th century medicine. And finally, we have Ruby Heap, who is a professor of history at the University of Ottawa. Like Ariane Morelli, she did her early work here at McGill and has come back. But she did a PhD at the University of Montreal and teaches in Ottawa, as I say. Has written extensively on the history of women in the professions, history of women in science, education, and has written as well extensively on the history of Canada more generally. And she will be speaking to us, I have to change the page, on Don't Forget Your Feminism and Your Solidarity with Other Women, the Activism of Canadian Women Scientists and Engineers, 1970s to the 1990s. So,